One step to the light, one step away from night. It's the hardest step you're gonna take. The ship to take you there is waiting at the head of the stairs that lead up through your open mind.
Welcome. This is RumorMillNewsRadio.com. I'm Raylan. I'm the publisher of Rumor Mill News. And today we are going to be interviewing one of our writers from Rumor Mill News, a man who posts under the name of Infinity. But when you see how he writes it, you will understand that he's writing about far more than infinity, if there is anything more than infinity. His name is John Fanucci, and I'm going to introduce him as a, what should I say, an expert or a student of sacred geometry. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me on the show. Can you hear me okay?
You're a little low, and hopefully our producer will up that a little bit for us.
Okay. That's, well, I would say I'm a student. We're always students on the path, so this is always, it's been a process of unfoldment and inspiration all the way, and I am just grateful to be on your show and have the opportunity to share it.
Well, I think we probably should talk, what is sacred geometry first? Before I ask you a lot of other questions I have, let's see if we can explain to people what we're talking about when we refer to sacred geometry.
That's a good question, and making it in a simple way. Every shape, every geometric shape has an opportunity to, I think what it boils down to is nest, you might say. When you go into 3D geometry, for instance, all 3D geometry is made up of squares, triangles, and pentagrams.
Right? John, I need to interrupt and ask you. My producer says your headset is making an echo. Oh, that's much better. I can hear you much better.
Okay.
Great. So let's go back. We were trying to figure out, or you were trying to tell me, and I'm trying to figure out, what is sacred geometry?
It's very broad, encompasses everything to do with geometry in every way, shape, or form. But when you start putting all the different shapes together, magic starts to happen and things start to fit and nest into each other. I got very, very interested in geometry when I was in the eighth grade, and I started to, I was very interested in, it was different. It was not just like your regular math. Amazing. I didn't really get into 3D geometry until I was asked to do a presentation on the sacred geometry, which when I started doing the 3D geometry and doing the drawings from 2D to 3D, I was amazed because I drew I know I'm getting off the subject. I drew a hexagram, and next thing you know, I'm drawing a 3D dodecahedron. And what it's been for me is an enfoldment. Sacred geometry has, I guess, it puts together, I'm kind of getting a little nervous here, but it's putting together your phi stuff, your golden ratio geometry, which is all based on 5. And I think that's really the sacred part. Most people don't understand the 5 part of the geometry, the 5.
Now, are you saying 5 as in the number 5 or phi as in phi?
Five and phi. Phi is in 5. All the phi words have to do with 5. Phi, fire, spirit, all is magnify, glorify, etc. Phi, though, is that magic number that is, it's 1.618, and so on. It's one of those irrational numbers. If you were to draw a 5-pointed star, and people could look at some of the posts, it would be the chord that goes between 2 points. In other words, it's going, there's 5 points. It would go between, let's say, 1 and 3 on a 5-pointed star. That would be 5, and one of the faces would be 1. But when you start making the drawings with the using the pentagram, the first thing you're going to draw, you're going to see it makes 5 pentagrams make a dodecahedron. I mean, we're getting technical, but I think the drawings would be a good way to...
Our listeners also are at their computers, go to rumormillnews.com, go into the reading room, and there'll be a big red link on the front page of rumormillnews.com that says visit the reading room, and then look for Infinity, and the F-I is spelled P-H-I. And then you can just click open one of the posts, and you will see right in front of you these shapes, these geometric shapes that John is talking about. And yep. the one that I opened, the very first one, has this five stars in there.
I had posted one this morning earlier. It's on the golden ratio of basics. And the exact definition of the golden ratio, it's a ratio between the two quantities where the ratio of one to the other is the same as the ratio of a larger one or the smaller one to the sum of both numbers. And I think pictures do a lot more than trying to describe this type of thing.
Yes, but now realize that some of our listeners don't have their computers in front of them.
Right.
So they're going to have to go a little bit later. I just opened up the one on the golden ratio, and you've got a picture of a hand, and you're saying fingers are in golden ratio proportion. And
right.
Can you explain how that is?
Yes. Your bones in your hands are 0.618. Let's say the end tip of your finger, the next one would be in a ratio of 1, and the next one down would be 0.618. And they kind of travel. I believe that the golden ratio shape, it may have something to do even with healing and the perfect shape of the bones. I've got another template I'm working on with the bones, but the hands and the whole body is, and the body of most of your nature has everything to do with the ratios of bones of many animals is all golden ratio proportion.
Well, you even put a picture of a nautilus shell, and then you drew a square next to it to show us how the nautilus shell is the 0.618.
Right.
And it's extraordinary. And then you've got the pine cone there also. And I guess the pine cone is in perfect geometric golden mean ratio.
The pine cone, the sunflower, cauliflower, you know, a lot of nature has grows in phi ratio. It's the Fibonacci series. In that same drawing, you'll see the drawing called Phyllotaxis, and I put divine. It's like the vine is divine, but the vine of a tree branches out in that proportion, and the Fibonacci ratio approaches 1.618 to 1. In other words, the ratio of the number before to the number after, you know, so like 1, 3, 5.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, the drawing of the plant coming up from the ground, and as the roots come up and the plant it matures, if you turn it over, you've got a pyramid. So plants are literally an inverted pyramid. I'd never thought about that before.
But some plants could be. I don't know. I never did either.
Well, that wasn't what you were drawing. That's what I thought you were drawing.
Well, what I'm drawing is just showing the Fibonacci ratio going up in the plants, how the plants divide and nature divides in that golden ratio proportion.
Mm-hmm.
So as you start approaching, you know, 5 to 8 is 0.625. So it's 5/8, 13 to, I don't know what the exact decimals are, but as you start going up the series, I have a chart of it somewhere, it comes out to 1.618 to 1. In other words, it keeps increasing by 1.618, and that's one of those irrational numbers that goes on and on and on.
The second drawing that you have there has Mary's mudra, and you're showing the very famous picture of the statue of Mother Mary. Has her arms out and her cloak or whatever you call whatever she is wearing behind her, and it forms almost a natural, well, it's a natural pyramid, but it's almost a double pyramid. But here you have the double, you have the double pyramid in a six-pointed star. And can you explain what that's all about?
Okay, we're talking about the pentagram, and I'm going to start from basics before I get to that particular. I call it Mary's mudra, but I'm going to start with a five-pointed star. And a lot of people think the five-pointed star is some kind of evil thing. And just like everything else, they want you to believe that it's evil, but they don't call those things up in the stars spears. They call them stars. And starlight, I believe, comes from the stellation of the points. If you take the stellations or the points of the five-pointed star, which are infinitely, if you have a perfect fractal on each of the legs of the five-pointed star, and they turn, they compress infinitely, theoretically, into nothing to nothing to nothing. And when you take those petals and blow them up, you have a pentagonal pyramid. So if you look at the drawing right to the left of that, that's a photograph of one that I built out of paper. It shows the pentagonal pyramid. If you come across, you'll see the other drawing that shows it. If you look at it from the face, it's 60 degrees. If you look at it from the front view, no matter how you turn a pentagonal pyramid, it's 60 degrees from the front view. If you take a look at the what I put as Mary's mudra, you're from her third eye, let's say, going out to her hands. I drew that because if you're standing at the top of that pentagonal pyramid, the hands would be at 144 degrees of arc if you looked at it as the pentagram, and it would be, in other words, 18 degrees forward off the center, if you can relate to that. I think you'd have to see the drawing for those. It would be much, be very beneficial for those listening to see the drawing and trying to speak in, it's hard to put into words unless you see the picture, so I'm encouraging everyone to look at the pictures.
Yeah, if you could go, listeners, if you could go to Rumor Mill News, go into the reading room, and find the article by Infinity, that's P-H-I, look for the capital P-H-I, and you'll see Golden Ratio. It's Internal Stargate Basics, Golden Ratio. And so look for that. And we're still going to have to realize that a lot of our listeners are in a car driving, and
right,
they're not going to be able to see what we're what many of us are looking at right now. But going back to this five-pointed star, you're telling me if I cut out a five-pointed star and I fold it so that all the corners are touching, I'm going to have a pyramid. Is that what you called it?
It's
a five-pointed pyramid.
Exactly. It's a pentagonal pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And that pentagonal pyramid, when if people start looking at some of the drawings further down, you'll see that that's been probably, I consider that one of the most sacred symbols, and I have not seen it in any of the sacred geometry books. What happens when you close that pentagonal pyramid, you have a 3D, in other words, instead of nesting 2D pentagrams in, you know, on the pentagram, you'll nest infinite number of dodecahedrons inside the pentagonal pyramid. And if you look at, there's five platonic solids. One is a dodecahedron and icosahedron, and they're interchangeable, and they're phi-based. The dodecahedron has 20 points and 12 faces, and the icosahedron has 12 points and 20 faces. And what happens, if you look in that drawing, I showed that one fits inside of the other. And that's, I would say, if we look, talk about sacred geometry, what would my, I think the most awesome thing about it in 3D is looking how everything fits together and nests. And there's like cubes, five cubes fit inside of a dodecahedron perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Five tetrahedrons fit inside of a dodecahedron. Inside of your cube fits.
Now, why is this important for the world to know about this?
Well, we're starting with basics, but when I first got into making the drawings on the Stargate series,
mm-hmm,
I was inspired because I saw that picture of the Stargate, and I've been drawing the pentagonal pyramids. When they come together and interlace, it forms
Are you talking about CERN? That's what we on Rumor Mill call the CERN project, which they turned off for one day. They turned on for one day, and God only knows what it caused. Many of us thought if they had kept it on, it was going to, end the universe as we know it. And so they turned it off. So when you're talking about the Stargate, are you talking about CERN?
Well, when I first saw a picture, I saw a picture of a hallway, and in perspective, I said, oh my gosh, that's a Stargate. And I looked at the date, and the date was 9-10-2008. So it was a 9-10-2008 is a 1, so 9-1-1. And I said, boy, that's kind of auspicious for the date for them to start the CERN.
Yes, we all thought that.
So I had done a drawing previously with, I one day got inspired and I drew the I am that I am, and I did numerologically, and I is a 9 and am is a 5. I said, okay, that's the pentagonal pyramid coming to a center. It's actually a 5-1, but the 5-1 would be more the pentagonal pyramid, but 9 is your kind of your center. Nines and ones go together in numerology. When you put the two pentagonal pyramids together, it forms a, you know, dodecahedron geometry in the center. And I, you know, my kind of, I've got a long, it's hard to explain in a short time, but I see this as a time axis. The pentagonal pyramids come together, and the dodecahedron nesting everything else, I think it has a lot to do with time.
And so you connected this to the project at CERN, which, you know, the CERN scientists don't really tell us what they're doing over there. And those of us who were interested in it, we theorized that it was a Stargate and that they were opening up, what Star Trek people refer to as a wormhole, where beings or travel or trade from other galaxies, the far end of our universe could actually come through this Stargate that we wondered if the CERN people were opening up. Now, it seems to me that what you're doing with your geometry is you're almost creating the information that they would need to build their projects. Is that, am I seeing this correct?
I would say yes. And sometimes they keep secrets. I think that the interlaced pyramids, I think it has everything to do with time. And since your dodecahedron is your master 3D platonic solid, because everything fits inside of it, if you go to the first one I did, internal Stargate series, I said, look at the chakra. The solar plexus chakra is the only chakra that's 5 and 5, and there's an in-breath and an out-breath. So that's how I got inspired. I very much at the same time, all this started coming down. I was doing a biofeedback device for my heart rate variability and coherence. And at the same time I saw that picture, I said, oh my gosh, this is all in the breath. I know about breathing coherently. In other words, slow breaths will get you into a coherence where your heart and your mind are all in sync. The solar plexus chakra is little understood. When you have perfect peace, my theory is that your 2-flat, 5-petal, 5 and 5 solar plexus chakra, which is 10,
let's define what a chakra is. Let's not go too quickly.
Okay.
What do you define a chakra as?
They're energy centers in the body. The name, I think in Sanskrit means wheels that spin.
Mm-hmm.
And when I took a look at, if we want to get into the chakras, all the chakras have, in other words, there's 7 major chakras in the body, according to most traditions. And I'm not a seer or anything like that. All the geometry that I'm drawing has to fit together. That's kind of one of the things that I just meditate on something until it all fits. And that, even with the time axis being the vertical axis going through the chakras, it seems far out, but you'd have to look at the drawings. And they're different than anything else. And I'm not one for using other people's stuff right now. I haven't read stuff in a long time. I'm just getting stuff. And when the solar plexus chakra, stellates, in other words, it forms that pent pyramid, all kinds of magic can happen in the body, because then you're forming a perfect icosahedron. And an icosahedron will allow the dodecahedron geometry to work. So I believe that this is a major, you know, this major nerve center. The chakras are, you know, you feel like, for those listening, your solar plexus chakra is right in your diaphragm, and some people feel that little place where they feel butterflies in the stomach, or they get nervous, or, when they have problems or fears, usually feel it right there.
And
your heart, you'll feel love.
These are energy centers. We could compare it to the energy centers of acupuncture, couldn't we?
I think the acupuncture points are more over the whole body.
Yes, they are.
My background, see, a lot of this comes from my background was in polarity therapy, which had to do with energy healing and energy in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the diagrams, I kind of redid the drawings there, and but I remember the thing. I mean, you have three element theory, four element theory, and five element theory in the science of polarity. A lot of times, when I do the drawings, it has to work in the body because I believe the body is a microcosm of the universe. So a lot of this stuff has been putting the puzzle together to make the body, the geometry, and everything work together. So a lot of the drawings I'm making they're fitting with the geometry. When you take the chakras and stellate them, in other words, you make them from 2D to 3D, the sacred geometry, you might say, starts to work. Instead of being flat, all your chakras then would all fit, theoretically they'll all fit together. The base is four, but when you stellate it becomes an octahedron. The octahedron would fit inside of a cube. The soul chakra coming up one chakra up near your navel has six petals. This is based, the chakras are, the numbers of the chakras have been given by ancient seers. It's just traditional knowledge, I guess, in many professions, or many, you know, religions in the East. But the six turns into, if two flat, six would be, two, let's say, two triangles, and they both stellate, it turns into a star tetrahedron. And then, same thing, your solar plexus, two pent pyramids turn into an icosahedron. So I mean, that's what I'm showing with the chakras.
It's so amazing because you see all of the, you know, the symbology that is used in many religions or even going back to the Egyptians, and a lot of the symbols, you know, the six-pointed star, the five-pointed star, the triangle, these are sacred geometric shapes. Now, what kind of power, if any at all, I don't know, but what kind of power do these shapes have? I mean, why would, people use a cross or use a triangle or use a six-pointed star or the Templar cross? Why would they choose, why would people choose these sorts of symbols for their religion or their belief systems?
All the numbers, I think Plato submitted a quote, all is number, Plato or Pythagoras, one of them. But basically, your geometry is numbers, and it goes, from your basic numbers, everything has a value, so everything does mean something. The five and the six, I call it five-sex physics. But it's five and six. If you look at an icosahedron, which you're forming when you put the two pentagonal pyramids together, if you look at an icosahedron from the front view, looking at it straight ahead, you'll see a hexagram in 2D. If you turn it 90 degrees and rotate it towards you, you'll see a pentagram. You'll see five and five. And that's my definition of physics, because within the icosahedron nests, of course, dodecahedron. And this makes the magic happen for all of the cube, the tetrahedrons all nest inside of the dodecahedron. So your geometry and all your crystalline structure in the material world is going to fit into these irrational types of shapes. Irrational meaning they've got phi in there, and phi is an irrational number. And
well, you know, you are so passionate about sharing your work, and I just wonder, what are you feeling inside that you're feeling that you've got to get this message out in a very positive way? What is moving you right at the moment? I know you haven't written a book. So many people, they get just a little tiny bit of the puzzle, and they decide to write a book. But I can tell from your, you know, just looking at what you've been doing, that you are practically at the encyclopedic level, and yet you have not published a book. So why are you giving all of this information away to the world at this particular time?
Well, that's a good question. I live my life now more by synchronicity than everything else. There's lots of stuff out there. There's lots of information. We have to sort out what's real and what's not real. And I like when time conjunctions happen or synchronicities, and many things happen together at the same time. And it goes back to when this whole deal started. I saw the CERN thing. I also heard I heard a voice loud and clear, don't wait. I've been drawing lots. I've been messing around with the geometry and the drawings for a couple years now. In fact, someone asked me to do a talk about the golden ratio, and it evolved quite a bit. I was very much in the flat world a couple of years ago, and I started drawing some of these 3D figures, and it was very, very easy to draw. And it was more understandable for me than the 2D stuff. I understood how it all nested and fit together. So why do I need to get this out to the world? Because I think there's some keys here that I haven't seen with the breath and the in-breath and the out-breath using the shape and the waveform and the dodeca pentapyramid nested has everything to do, I believe, with the breath and time and transcending time and taking us through a portal into we're coming into tough times. I don't know the answer to escape what's coming down on this planet.
You hold your thought right there, and I want to come back on the breath, too.
Okay.
Because the breath is very, very healing. But we're going to have to take a break. You're listening to Rumor Mill News. Radio.com. My name's Raylan Allen, and we're talking about sacred geometry with John Fanucci, and we're going to be right back.
Despair shines a light. One step into the light, one step away from night. It's the hardest step you're gonna take. The ship to take you there is waiting at the head of the stairs that lead up through your open mind.
Welcome back. We're taking another step into the light. Today we're discussing sacred geometry and the geometric symbols that are all around us in nature and in many of our religions and on many of our cars. Do you know what the Chrysler symbol looks like? To me, it looks like the five-pointed star that John was talking about and folded into the pent pyramid. And if you look down on it, that's the Chrysler symbol. And so, welcome back. This is John Fanucci, and he is one of the writers on rumormillnews.com. And he's been studying sacred geometry for quite some time and now has a feeling to start sharing it even before he puts out a book on it. And we were talking about the breath. And, of course, many people refer to the breath as sacred. And there are 100 different theories about how you can breathe, or the way that you breathe actually can cure yourself. There's a man that even sells a device, and he says that with this device, and you're using it a few times a day, you can heal the body of all sorts of problems. And so the breath is something that teachers, you know, from the beginning of time have emphasized that their students pay attention to. And I believe it was the breath, when you made the connection between a certain way of breathing and sacred geometry, that sort of opened this door for you. Am I right there?
Yes, I would say the breath is definitely connected. And this waveform, if you take the waveform of the, if you look at waves in 60 degrees and the golden ratio in particular, when they form, if you put it into a waveform, the waves phase, they kind of come together to a point. And that, I believe that there's waves that for every breath is a new creation going out, and is it comes around and cycles back to you. And what you breathe in is your what you've done before, or your karma. You can consciously breathe in, hold your breath, and recreate. and change your karma, change what was there before by your thoughts. So I believe every breath in is taking in what you want to take in. If you're unconscious, you're going to take in what you get. If you breathe out consciously, you can recreate. And especially when, if you breathe holding in these crystalline forms, I think there's a lot more potential to manifestation.
And you're not just talking about creating a healthy physical body, which is what most people who teach breathing techniques are talking about. You're talking about using the breath to actually manifest all sorts of things in your life. Is that what I just heard you say?
I haven't gotten there yet, but I'm trying to figure that out. I believe that, yes, I past cultures, we've read lots of stories along the way of people being able to manifest, and masters in India, and there's probably lots of stories about that, about people being able to manifest. Some people don't believe it, but I do believe it. I haven't seen it, and I haven't physically manifested anything. However, I think that it's possible, and I mean, of course, it's always a puzzle, this all of life and how everything works. So I think the breath is the key to it.
I do, too. Most of the Rumor Mill News readers know the story of when I died with spinal meningitis and went to a classroom on the other side and learned a technique that involved the breath. And so I was teaching that for many, many years and probably would still be teaching it if I hadn't married my husband, Gunter Rusbacher, and, you know, spent 10 years just trying to stay alive. And by the time the 10 years was over, I realized that healing people one at a time is not the way to go, that our whole world, our whole civilization is in danger of imminent collapse. And so I never did go back to teaching, you know, on the one-to-one basis how to do this. I decided to, you know, put all the information out on a website so if those who were moved by it could go the next step, or just put simple things on the website to wake people up, like, you know, who owns the Federal Reserve. But what I'm sensing you're saying is if each person could just control their own breath, incredible things might automatically manifest in the world.
I think so, and that's part of the whole challenge we have. We're in a very unstable world right now where all kinds of things could be coming down, and I believe that God is great, and the power of transmutation can overcome it. And so if we breathe our, you know, breathe in the stuff. In other words, kind of goes to the theory of extreme forgiveness, too, of breathing in your stuff, acceptance of everything that's there. And the Ho'oponopono, if anybody's ever heard of that, you may be able to do a web search on that. But there was a doctor that was in a hospital that had a bunch of very ill patients, and he didn't even touch anybody. He just accepted everything as his instead of theirs. I guess he did his little technique, forgave himself, forgave them. So what I'm saying, for coming full circle on that, I call it extreme forgiveness, where you accept what comes your way into your world, hold it, and then as you breathe out, you can transform it and recreate something else.
Well, I have been interviewing people who have just had the most horrible things happen to them. They lose their businesses, you know, for no reason whatsoever. They suddenly find themselves in a position where they literally can't do anything that they used to be doing to keep themselves working. And, you know, they're just trapped. I mean, one of my friends ended up in the dead of winter in Cleveland in living in a van because she'd lost her house to the subprime. What I am seeing is many people, and you are an example of this, you lost your business. And yet out of the business, out of losing it, something incredible has manifested. And it's almost like, you know, before I married Gunter, I was making quite a bit of money. I was quite happy. I was living a really good life. I probably, if I hadn't married him, I'd probably be one of the leaders of the New World Order right at the moment. That was the road I was going down. And then suddenly, Gunter came into my life. I lost all the trappings of this life, you know, anything of value I had to sell immediately because guess what? All of our money disappeared out of our banks. And so I had to find a new path. I had to, figure out what in the world was going on in the world. And this same thing happened to you. And I'm almost looking at these things, you know, things that when they happen, they're the most horrible things that could ever happen to you. And it's happening all over the country right at the moment. I just saw another 50,000 people are being laid off by Chase Bank. And so all of these people, they have no jobs, they have no money, they're losing their houses, they're losing their cars, they're ending up homeless. And the people that I have run across in the last month or so, every one of these people was in a position just like this, practically homeless, and then out of their bad luck, something incredible came. And that reminds me of the dualities that we've got in life. I mean, it's a simple rule of physics. It says for every, you know, every push forward, there's an equal push backwards. And I use that example to say that there is a new world order, but there cannot, one power cannot exist alone. There has to be something that balances it out. And I want to ask you about the pyramid on our dollar bill. What symbology in sacred geometric symbology, what do you think of that?
It's not a standard pyramid like the Great Pyramid. At least it looks like it's going up at an angle, pretty steep up.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was thinking, I had to look at it twice. I thought maybe it was almost the Penn Pyramid. I remember looking at it. It's not just your standard pyramid. It goes up pretty steep. I don't know. Symbology, you know, the Masons or whoever designed it, they have the all-seeing eye at the top. And I honestly don't know what their message is. It may have something to do with, you know, some of their secrets.
Well, many people believe it has to do with the New World Order coming together when the, if you'll notice, the capstone is not attached to the bottom of it. And, of course, in the year 2000, that's when they were getting ready to have this huge celebration in Egypt where the capstone was going to be brought down on the pyramid, and that was going to be the symbol that the New World Order is now 100% in power. And that was one of my early predictions that I made on Rumor Mill News, that the capstone would never cap the pyramid. The New World Order will never be in power. And sure enough, all of the elite of the world had reservations to be in Cairo for this incredible moment when they were ushering in a one world order, one world government. And right before all of it happened, it was canceled, just as I had said it would be canceled. People don't realize there's another force. For every force that pushes forward, there's another force that pushes backwards. It's the good and the evil. Now, the sacred symbols in the Masonic order, and of course not most people, but a great number of people believe that the Masons are, you know, the fathers of the New World Order. And of course, if the Masons are the father of the New World Order, the Masons are the father of the United States of America, because most of the signers of our Declaration of Independence were either full-fledged Masons or had something to do with Masons. Therefore, if the Masons are evil and the Masons founded the United States of America, what does that say about the United States of America? So I've never quite understood. I know the Illuminati is evil, but because they are the ones that are behind the New World Order, but I've never understood how people get the Illuminati out of, how they make the Illuminati and the Masons one and the same.
I think there's intermingling in all areas, and people use, they don't understand there's higher levels above them, but I think that the whole universe is based on perfect geometry, and not just your shapes, your numbers, your letters, the alphabets, everything has to be in perfect order.
And yes, everything is in perfect order, and many times God has to use certain people to be the teachers of other people. And sometimes the lessons that are being taught, I mean, I look at Job and what happened to Job. Oh, my God. Was that God putting him through all of that, or was that, you know, some horrible demon that had attached to him and putting him through all of that?
I don't think we get our tests from the good guys. I think we get our tests from the bad guys.
Well, that's pretty much what I've come to believe. And I see it all as part of God. We're all connected to God.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like when you're chipping a diamond and trying to turn a diamond into a perfect, beautiful stone that can be put in a ring. Well, that diamond's the hardest thing in the entire world. How in the world are you going to do anything with it? But you have to. You have to strike it. You have to hit it. And eventually it'll crack and it'll become the most beautiful thing. And if you go back, even before the diamond becomes the diamond, to when it was a lump of coal, and you think about the incredible pressure that is being put on the coal to turn it into a diamond, and then talk about us, humans, and look at the incredible pressure that is being put on us to turn us into God's little diamonds. And that's why many times you look at a force and you think that it's the most evil thing in the entire world. But when you finish the lesson and you turn around and you look back, you go, thank God for that lesson. I'd never be where I am without it.
You're absolutely right. We have to, these tempering, that's what it's called, and,
mm-hmm.
and these challenges, you sometimes wonder if God created everything. I mean, there's some very, you know, apparently evil-looking people, and I think my biggest change spiritually was the Ho'oponopono philosophy of accepting everyone. I mean, I first went to, you know, with the government, first praying for it to be exposed. Those prayers got answered. Then I would say, well, these guys ought to go and be tarred and feathered. And then I said, well, you know, I can't really, if I hold that matrix on them, maybe their mama didn't love them, you know, whatever, at some level in the universe.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say tarred and feathered, because my next guest's father was tarred and feathered when she was a little girl.
Oh, my gosh.
And it is quite amazing that you used that particular,
Well, it hurts us to judge people. You come to the place of, all right, we're aware. Most of the people on Rumor Mill are quite aware of what's going on. And then you say, okay, let's look at it. What are they doing? You might say, hey, you know, these guys have done a great job doing their job. They've woken up the whole world. The whole world is getting conscious and looking for a new way out. And maybe because of the suffering, they'll get off of their sleep and wake up. And that's probably part of the plan. I don't think our whole culture would grow if we were just let be.
Well, my God, the culture the way it is right now, everybody's asleep in front of the television with the pizza and the potato chips and the can of beer in their hands. And you're right, there's no possible way that anybody can grow right at the moment. If you're too sound asleep, you're not going to learn anything.
So the bad guys are actually forcing people to become conscious. So it goes back to the basic Jesus. You know, if you look at Jesus, I think he was trained in Tibet, according to what I believe, and I believe he had a lot of teachings from the Buddhists, very similar teachings. Resist not evil. Judge not, lest you all these judge golden rule. You know, love your enemy. These were great simple things of the Buddhist non-duality. If you judge other people, what happens? You're judging yourself. And that's the amazing thing in that Ho'oponopono, if anybody could do a search on it, it's incredible. He healed the whole mental hospital by accepting them and loving them and forgiving himself. In other words, what we have in the world is really a reflection of us.
Do you know, Dr. Cyberlux is on the telephone, and nobody really knows who Dr. Cyberlux is, but I know who he is, and I want people to pay special attention to this guy, because he knows what he's talking about. So, Dr. Cyberlux, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Raylan. How are you today?
I'm just fine. Nice to hear from you.
Now, likewise. It's been a very horrendous weekend over here in Southern California, as you know. We've been fighting some major wildfires out here.
I know that. Did you want to talk about that, or did you have some questions for John? Because we can do both.
We could, if you like. What would you like to do? I know you're on the subject right now.
We've only got about 7 minutes, but I really would like to have a first-hand report of the fire. John,
sure.
Do you mind if we cut into your 7 minutes with
it? Sure. If it doesn't interrupt your subject, sure.
Right. So go ahead, Dr. Cyberlux.
Well, right now I just wanted to give you an update. Some of the portions of both the Sayre and the Triangle fire are still out of control, but most of the fires that are now burning are not in harm's way of any residential or farm communities at the moment.
And what do you think started all of this?
Well, it's hard to say. I think it may have been a combination of both the winds of the Santa Ana, and there has been talk of possibility of arson as well as contributing to this condition.
Yeah. I have a feeling this fits in with Agenda 21. I don't know if you're familiar with Agenda 21, where they want to create islands of humanity to put all of us people on so that the elite can have access to the rest of the world without having to elbows with the great unwashed, meaning you and I. And so burning us out of the areas where these fires are, those are areas that they want to give back to wildlife. And so I truly believe that these fires, whether they are natural, in other words, they just wait for the Santa Ana winds or the Santana winds, and then they send arsons out to the specific place where they want to burn down this time. I just really believe it is all part of this taking us to a place where humans will only be allowed to live in a very, very tiny portion of the land that we have on Earth, and then the rest will be given back to the animals and the New World Order.
Well, it does sound interesting because of some of the areas where a lot of these fires have occurred. You know, it has been historically known that some of these valleys have had horrendous winds over the decades, and the idea of development in these areas seems a bit ludicrous, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree.
And we're seeing this, a perfect example of this right now, what's going on at both major fire locations. I live only a few miles from the Sayre fire, and luckily the winds were going westward. If it was going eastward, I probably would have had the fire in my neighborhood. Meanwhile, over at the Triangle fire, I just happened to show up on the 91 freeway about 45 minutes into the Triangle fire. I was able to take some photographs of the fire, and I have these that I will be posting at our River Mill news site.
Wonderful.
And it was quite horrendous because at the time when I was on the 91 freeway and the fire plume just started, they quickly tried to evacuate us out of the area as fast as possible. So that's why I was able to quickly get some photographs and then leave the area as fast as I could.
And were you able to get back into your house? Was it okay?
Luckily, where I lived, it was okay. It was like two or three exits before the road closures.
Good.
But unfortunately, I had a cousin who lives on the opposite side of the Triangle fire in Corona, in which we could not get through, and we had to have her stay at friends in Huntington Beach.
Oh, boy. Well, Dr. Cyberlux, I know that you are interested in what our guest John is talking about. Did you have any comments to make on the sacred geometry?
Well, the sacred geometry is a very interesting concept of what you may believe in. I found in my own research that we may be dealing with two separate types of sacred geometry, one a more ancient and older version as well as a more modern version. And what I mean by modern version, I'm talking about that would be late B.C., early A.D., and a much more ancient version that may have been probably from the time of when the books of Genesis were written in the Bible and other historical documents of that time period.
Well, that is most interesting. I think you and John need to have a bit of a conversation, and then maybe, because we're right at the time where we're going to have to end the program, it would be incredible to maybe have the two of you on talking about this together, because, John, had you heard about this older version of sacred geometry?
I would think so, probably, because the problems that are interesting about both the old and the new that shed some light. He's probably heard of Velikovsky and
yes.
Some of the writings that he brought out back in the 1950s about planets in collision, how planets were knocked out of orbit and out of position due to a great comet or some sort of great universe catastrophe that occurred in the ancient days. And this may have readjusted the ancient codes from the original ancient ones to the more present-day ancient codes that we follow today.
More present-day. And, you know, I'm going to have to end it here because we are coming to the end of our hour. I want to thank my guest, John Fanuzzi, and thank you, Dr. Cyberlux, for calling in. And we're going to talk more about this. We're going to figure more about what is going on and what sacred geometry really is. And we'll be right back. We're going to be talking with a Cherokee medicine woman. And boy, does she have some stories. So this is Raylan from RumorMillNewsRadio.com, and you're listening to us on the MicroEffect.com radio network. And we will be back.
Send it back to you.